Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mayananyena bhavena Bhaktim kuravanti dvidam Matkrite tyakta karmanas Chakta swajana bandhava Mayi ananyena bhavena Bhaktim kuravanti dvidam Matkrite tyakta karmanas Tyakta swajana bandhava Mayi unto me ananyena bhavena with undeviated mind bhaktim devotional service kurvanti perform yea those who Dvidham staunch matkrite for my sake chakta renounced karmanaha activities chakta renounced swajana family relationships. Bandhava. Friendly acquaintances. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord without deviation. For the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections, such as family relationships and friendly acquaintances within the world. Purport. A person in the renounced order of life, a sannyasi, is also called a sadhu because he renounces everything, his home, his comfort, his friends, his relatives, and his duties to friends and to family. He renounces everything for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A sannyasi is generally in the renounced order of life, but his renunciation will be successful only when his energy is employed in the service of the Lord with great austerity. It is said here, therefore, bhaktim kurvanti ye dvidam. A person who seriously engages in the service of the Lord and is in the renounced order of life is a sadhu. A sadhu is one who has given up all responsibility to society, family, and worldly humanitarianism simply for the service of the Lord. As soon as he takes his birth in the world, a person has so many responsibilities and obligations to the public, to the demigods, to the great sages, and to the general living beings, to his parents, to the family forefathers, and to many others. When he gives up all such obligations for the sake of the service of the Supreme Lord, he is not punished for such renunciation of obligation. But if for sense gratification a person renounces all such obligations, he is punished by the law of nature. Ashvalambam
Ashvamedham Garvalambam. Sannyasam Pailapaitrikam. Devarena Sutotpati. Kalau Panchavivarjiet. And I think this is from Manusmriti actually. Five. Otherwise, auspicious activities are forbidden in Kali Yuga. The performance of sacrifice by killing a horse. It's not that animal killing is completely sinful. It's the logicians explain that it's not proper definition of violence, ahimsa, to say it's just killing. It's unjustified killing. When soldiers kill the enemy as their duty, it's justified. When the brahmanas, who are properly engaged in sacrifice, kill an animal, he's not sinful. There is no sin involved. And the animal benefits, in his next life he gets a human body. There are two classes of Vedic sacrifices. The simpler ones, these are Vedic sacrifices. There are there are Shrauta rituals and Grihya rituals. There are the simplest sacrifices, which you just do yourself in your home. And then there are the more complex sacrifices that require more than one priest. But even those, and those are the Shrauta sacrifices, that you they're not just according to custom or according to the Smritis, just instructions how to perform samskaras and so on. But these are actual Vedic sacrifices that are explained in the Brahmanas, in the original Vedas. Hare Krishna. Jai Shri Radha Kunja Bihari Shri Gurnitai. So, among the Vedic sacrifices, the actual sacrifices that are taught in the Vedas, the most authorized, there are still two different kinds. The simpler ones, which are called just Ishti, and then the Soma Yajna. These are sacrifices, the most potent sacrifices are the ones in which you offer the Soma. You can attain entrance to heaven if you get the remnants of the Soma juice. Even among the demigods, only 10, and then the Ashwini Kumars were added, the 11th, are allowed to drink the Soma juice. So you get some Soma, you're very fortunate. Apama Somam Amrita Abhuma. We have drunk the Soma juice and become immortal. Well, you have to perform the Soma sacrifice if you want to get some. They're the most complicated Vedic sacrifices. And it's in the Soma sacrifices only that the animals are killed. Part of the sacrifice. So you can kill a horse or some other animal. But this is forbidden in Kali Yuga. Because it's misused. Lord Buddha had to appear to stop sacrifices because they were being misused. People were killing the animals just because they wanted to eat them. So, in Kali Yuga, that's forbidden. Also, the Gavalambam, which is a sacrifice in which a cow is killed, that is forbidden. Third, sannyas is forbidden. Forbidden. Because people are not qualified. They take it just to avoid the botheration of their family. They run away and become a sadhu. So that kind of sannyas is forbidden in Kali Yuga. It's misused. And then two others. Pailapaitrikam is offering flesh to the pitras, to your forefathers, when you perform shraddha. In Kali Yuga, Shraddha should be performed not by offering, you know, the pinda, the ball. It was a ball of meat, of flesh, that was offered. But in Kali Yuga, we substitute this purodasha, sort of an idli, rice cake, that you offer instead. The offering of meat to the ancestors is forbidden in Kali Yuga. And devarena sutotpatihi. The practice of a widow having children by the older brother of her deceased husband. This is forbidden in Kali Yuga. We saw it in the case of Vyasadeva begetting the three children. The older brother of Vichitravirya, correct? Vyasadeva? Anyway, three sons were born. Pandu, Dhritarashtra, and Vidura. So they were born by this process of Devarena Sutosa. Devara means older brother. That is forbidden in Kali Yuga. So the only exception is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has ordered some of his disciples to take sannyas, and that practice has continued for the purpose of spreading Krishna consciousness. The risk is taken. And with the blessings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one can do what is forbidden. We do some things that are ordinary forbidden, like chanting Hare Krishna. Not that chanting Hare Krishna is forbidden, but it's not given to everybody. First of all, you want to chant a mantra, whether it's a Vedic mantra or a Pancharatrika mantra, you must receive it by Diksha. You cannot simply start chanting on your own without specific order, without initiation. You should not chant some mantra. But we're all chanting. We're going out in the streets and telling everybody, including the, you know, the people who are Pagal and Sharabi, we tell them all, chant Hare Krishna. And we encourage everybody, please join us and chant. How is this? Isn't this forbidden? And also, there are very dangerous offenses in the chanting of Hare Krishna. This mantra is not just an ordinary mantra. We are addressing Krishna with his pleasure potency. Sticking our nose into Krishna's intimate business. We come so close to Krishna, we have to be careful about offenses. There are serious offenses against Krishna's name, nama-aparad. If we commit them, then the effect will be worse than not chanting. We can go to hell. So what are we doing? Why are we chanting? Maybe it's safer not to chant. And we don't have authority to chant. Well, we do have authority. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given diksha to every man, woman, and child in the universe. He's given his order. And with the order, he's given his assurance. Don't worry about all those offenses. I'll take them on my own head. Only for that, because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's special, what we call dispensation, what the Christians call dispensation, is everybody allowed to go ahead and chant Hare Krishna and encouraged? Otherwise, it's restricted, not completely forbidden, but it's you know, when Kapiladeva, we're reading Kapiladeva's instructions. He's talking now, he talked about sadhu for a few verses. Now he's identifying the sadhus as Vaishnavs. They perform devotional service to me. They're not impersonalists. So he's clarifying himself. And eventually, toward the end, he will explain to his mother that what sadhus do is chant Krishna's names. They perform some kirtana. He reveals that to his mother, but not immediately. He's gradually revealing the essence of spiritual life. So the way that he presents it is that a successful sadhu, one who has already purified himself completely, he's the one who engages in some kirtan. That's the normal process. First become a perfect yogi, and then you can chant Hare Krishna. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has reversed the process. With no qualification, go ahead and chant Hare Krishna. Perform Sankirtan. Such an amazing Sankirtan exists eternally, that process. But normally it's only indulged in by those who are already free from offenses. Completely purified already. So special mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that we can, without becoming qualified first, we can chant Krishna's names. Without becoming pure first. And also, we can enter the sannyasa order even though it's technically forbidden in Kali Yuga. The impersonalists think that sannyas means no material, yes, it means no material identity, but they think it means no identity, or that your only identity is that you're Narayana. Om Namo Narayanaya, they greet one another, the Mayavadi sannyasis. That means, I guess, a sannyasi is not yet on the topmost platform. That's not a Paramahamsa, that's just an ordinary sannyasi. He's Narayana. Because if he was fully realized, he should not even be Narayana. Narayana is just Saguna Brahman. He's just personality of Godhead. And as far as they're concerned, the absolute truth in its ultimate reality is not a person. Hare Krishna. So anyway, it's misunderstanding of sannyas. They think that a sannyasi, his renunciation means to give up everything. To just turn inward and merge with the Supreme. That his only business is to study Vedanta Sutra, to meditate and perform severe austerities. Papanchakataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastunaha mumukshubi parityago palgavairagya muchyate. Thinking, oh, this is all material. All these things are material. This money, these women, these buildings, this human society, it's all material. It just should be all dismantled and dissolved. And I should just reject it all and have nothing to do with anything. Hari sambandhi vastuna. But this is all Krishna's energy. These things that you're rejecting belong to Krishna and are intended to be used in Krishna's service for his pleasure. So you are rejecting what's meant to be used for Krishna's pleasure. This is inferior renunciation. This is not a really proper understanding of what sannyas should be. And we see that these so-called sannyasis end up reverting back to their material attachments, these impersonal sannyasis. They decide to build a hospital or do some other mundane welfare work, start some school, because they can't find the actual juice of spiritual life. They have no taste, so they go back to the material taste. This is inferior renunciation. How can they renounce anything anyway? Nothing belongs to them. Or in general, what can we renounce? We can renounce something if we own it. But what do we own? Nothing. Everything is Krishna's property. So if a gentleman came to the temple and said, I want to donate this nice car out in the street there. That's my car. I want to donate it to the temple. So the temple president would be very thankful. But he would also ask him, well, can you give me the keys to the car and the title? You know, and is it okay? Is it unencumbered? You know, do we have to pay, you know, a lot of bills? Do we still owe money on the car? There's some, you know, you have to know. And then the man admits, okay, I'm sorry. It's not really my car. I wanted to donate it. What's the use? You want to give something, but it doesn't belong to you. No practical use. So that's false renunciation. You want to give something up, but it's not yours in the first place. You want to reject this body, its senses, and your desires. But this body is not yours, it belongs to Krishna. You should take care of it and use it for Krishna. That is Rupa Goswami's explanation of what is inappropriate renunciation, as practiced by the impersonalists. And in the next verse, he describes what he considers appropriate renunciation. Anasaptasya vishayan yatarham upayunjataha nirbanda krishna sambande yuktam vairagyam uchyate. We have to, in the service of Krishna, use things of this world. Because what else are we going to do to please Krishna? We're not living in the spiritual world. We don't have spiritual senses. We don't have spiritual bodies. We don't have desire trees and surabhikarls from where we can obtain transcendental objects of gratification for Krishna's pleasure. All we have is our material bodies, our material minds and senses, and all these material things around us, and our family, our money, our friends. This is all we have. Our material brains. So we have to take what we have and give them to Krishna. The principle is, do that. How else are you going to serve Krishna? You have to use what you have and give it to him. But do it without becoming too attached. Anasaptasya. The objects you may in this world are designed by Maya to attract us and entangle us. Try to understand in a higher sense that it's Krishna's energy. Let's give it back to Krishna. I may have taken a wife for sense gratification, but now I'm becoming more serious about trying to be Krishna's devotee. I'm trying to understand my wife is not just a machine for my sense gratification. She's a Vaishnava and Krishna's maidservant. So I should take my wife and my child, everything I have, and use them for Krishna's pleasure. Nirbanda Krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchyate. Become detached by attaching everything to Krishna. That's appropriate renunciation. That's also sannyasa. Even for those who can't actually enter the order, they can still practice the principles. The brahmacharis, the grihasthas, the vanaprasthas, and the sannyasis can all follow Rupa Goswami's instructions according to their individual capacities. And become sadhus. It's not in our line, Prabhupada said if sannyasi is a sadhu, but elsewhere he defines sadhu more broadly. It's not that only the sannyasis are sadhus. Some of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, like many of the Babaji's, that's their concept. And the Mayavadis also. That only a sannyasi can be a sadhu. You cannot be a pure devotee in the grihastha order. You cannot go back to Godhead. You cannot attain liberation. This is a common idea. But Prabhupada doesn't teach that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not teach that. That you can only love Krishna. You can only attain love of God. You can only go back, attain liberation, go back to Godhead, if you're in the renounced order. It's certainly a lot easier if you give up attachment to family life completely, then you have achieved automatically 50% of liberation, at least. But although normally those who have attachment to sex must remain in the material world, Vaishnavas, without taking formally the renounced order, can transcend all material desires and become free. They don't have to go through the formalities of entering the renounced order. It is stated. Padastrayo bahir hyasan aprajanam ya ashrama antas trilokis traparo aparo prahadvitaha trilokis. I can't remember a few words. Anyway, there are four divisions of creation, of the material world. There are three that are beyond Swargaloka, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka. These are meant for those who are, not Mahar, Jana Tapa Satya, are meant only for those who are completely celibate. Anyone who has any sexual activity or sexual attachment cannot enter these worlds. You must stay, you can go up to Swargaloka, but not beyond. Or Maharloka is for the Prajapatis, the Grihastas who are sages, great rishis. But only the celibates can enter the three highest worlds in the material world. Everything else below that is for those who are entrapped in family life. And the strict principle is, to get liberation, you have to give up that and become completely celibate. We do, but the renounced order, we don't. We take it in Kali Yuga only for the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for the purpose of preaching. If we don't preach and we take sannyas, we will be in trouble. It is dangerous, and one cannot overcome that or be protected from the danger unless he's working vigorously for the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. A sannyasi's business in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to preach the Sankirtan movement, to preach Srimad Bhagavatam, to travel everywhere and enlighten the devotees. Mayananyena bhavene bhaktim kurvanti yedvidam. So the sadhus, according to Kapiladev, are devotees who serve Krishna without material motives. And when appropriate, they're ready to give up their families and everything material. It doesn't mean that in every single case, every Vaishnav runs away from his family. Nor would it be appropriate for every Vaishnav to do that. The example is of the Pandavas. Krishna wanted them to remain in family life. Arjuna, in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, which is just at the beginning of the Kurukshetra battle, wanted not to take formal sannyas. As a kshatriya, he's not allowed to. Only brahmanas can take sannyas. But he wanted to do the equivalent. He wanted to take vanaprastha and go to the forest. He wanted to give up his duty as a kshatriya and just renounce everything and go meditate. And Krishna told them, this is foolish. Ashochyanam vashochastvam pragyavadams to shabashase. You want to be like a Brahmin now, like a yogi. But actually you're like a Shudra. Anvashochas. You're lamenting for what doesn't deserve to be lamented for, and you're speaking such learned words. Isn't that contradictory? You're posing as a brahmana, but you're, by your lamentation, you're proving yourself to be a shudra. So Arjuna, don't do this artificial renunciation. Krishna didn't want Arjuna or his brothers to take sannyas, because Krishna did once advise Arjuna to put on sannyas dress. Do you know this story? Oh, no, you must. What? To get Subhadra as his wife. You know, Krishna told him, why don't you dress up as a sannyasi and then you can get access. So he did that, but that was just a ploy. Otherwise, Krishna didn't, you know, wanted them to stay as grihastas, the five Pandava brothers. And they did it. they served and satisfied Krishna by remaining in their family attachment. They did it only for Krishna's pleasure. But when they heard that Krishna was leaving this world, Yudhishthira made up his mind, there's no need to stay any longer. As soon as Krishna gave the signal that everything is finished, the pastimes are now finished, they were ready in 1 minute to give up everything. So that's the highest attitude of a pure devotee. That for Krishna's pleasure, he'll accept material attachment. And for Krishna's pleasure, he'll give it up in 1 minute, as soon as Krishna shows that he wants that. Not something to be imitated, but that's actually the ideal Vaishnava position. We accept whatever is favorable for Krishna's service and reject whatever is unfavorable. Even what, according to mundane calculations, is material attachment, we'll accept it if that's what Krishna wants. Okay, so I'll stop there. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. Yes.
When Arjuna says that it's like butter and fire.
Yes.
So what is essential to be able to see the Krishna Sambandha in the sense of things? Is it this conscious intellectual cultivation or yes. What is it?
Well, you cannot help but become attached. What to speak of becoming attached, you have a spouse. Unless you're incompatible and hate each other, there will be some attachment. Even hatred is a perverted form of attachment. You know, if I hate somebody, that means I'm attached to him. I'm obsessed about the person I hate. If I don't care about somebody, then I don't even think about them. So it's natural. Men and women will become attached if they come close to each other. That can't be avoided. Even other things. You know, I have a nice computer. I have a nice wristwatch. I become attached to it. You know, it can't. The living entity becomes attached to whatever sense object he accepts. But so when Rupa Goswami says, "Don't be attached," it can't be taken too literally because it's impossible not to become attached somewhat. If you're a living entity and you have a mind and senses that go about like mind and senses do. But you have to minimize the attachment as much as you can. The more Krishna conscious you actually are, the more strength, more sense of renunciation you have, then even in a situation where you've got objects that are going to make you attached, you become less and less attached to them. Narottam Das Thakur, he prays, a samsara vasana mor kobe tucho hobe. These remnants, vasana is a remnant of desire. You've given up an activity, but you still have some memory, little faint remembrance of it, some faint attraction to it. We have that. We all experience that. You haven't done this thing in years, but sometimes you, for a moment or two, you think about it, something you used to do. That's vasana, traces of desire in the mind. When will my traces of desire for material enjoyment become totally insignificant? Tucha. He doesn't even say when will they become zero. He doesn't expect that. The material mind will always be speaking nonsense and suggesting involvement in sense gratification. But the pure devotee won't listen to his mind. It'll become totally insignificant. Just like you pass a billboard advertising alcohol. You see it, but you're not going to go out and buy the alcohol. The devotee won't do that. No chance. So like that, your mind may say, oh, don't you want to enjoy this or that? And you won't listen to it. So it's not that there'll be no attachment and no desire. But when you get to the higher level of full Krishna consciousness, it's totally insignificant. It has no... There's no hope of that material attraction actually causing you to indulge, ever. That's what Narottam Das Thakur is praying for. Not that while living in the material world, you'll never experience any trace of material desire in the mind. Impossible. As long as you're still living in a material body. But to minimize it and have it get it down to the point where it can't change your behavior. You'll never act on it. You may see the billboard advertising liquor, but you'll never think about actually going out and getting a bottle of whiskey. Okay? Hare Krishna. That's okay. Yeah.
I heard two somewhat contradictory things. One is the self, out of sight, out of mind.
Yes.
That's one thing. The other thing is that actually regulation is the best way to give up sense gratification. But on the other hand, we also heard.
Which is the best way to give up
regulation?
Regulation.
But also, they said that, you know, like, even regulated sense enjoyment is putting.
Both of those principles are appropriate, but they are opposites, but they're not contradictory. Both are appropriate for certain people in certain circumstances, and they may both be appropriate for the same person in different times. You know, it may be appropriate for a person to train up as a brahmachari and spend several years as a brahmachari, and then that same person may have to get married later on. If one can, out of sight, out of mind generally, but some people, even with out of sight, the mind still carries on. And can you create a situation for your brahmacharis where they'll never see a woman? Rishyasringa's father tried to do that, and he didn't know what a woman was. And you know what happened to him? Everybody know the story of Rishyasringa? Okay, so you can't keep completely out of sight. Even in this, you know, men's only ashram, unless you, okay, make one in the, you know, in a very secluded place, maybe, but you know, that's artificial, and you can still, the brahmachari still can fall into trouble. So, if you can, if a person can become satisfied in renounced life, be happy to be a brahmachari, feel no need to enter family life, then he can go on forever like that. And he doesn't have to associate with the opposite sex. But some, or maybe many have, you know, can't do that. It's Kali Yuga. We weren't born as brahmacharis, most of us. Jai Shri Radhe Kunja Bihari Shri Gornitai. Both principles are there. Was it the best? Is regulation what the best? What is regulation?
Regulation is the best way to give up attachment. On the other hand, you say it's like putting blocks of fire.
Yes. Just like a doctor has at his disposal the whole pharmacopoeia, so many medicines, and some of them may be contradictory. One may, you know, medicine may agitate or increase the kapha mucus in the body, another drug decreases it. They're contrary medicines, but they're both appropriate for different situations. So accepting sense gratification in a regulated fashion is appropriate for one kind of disease or one condition, and for another condition, having no indulgence is better. It depends on what situation a devotee's in. If he's able to live peacefully with no indulgence, then that's the better position. But for those who can't, there should be everything should be regulated safely. Okay. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Krishna wants, he gives a thumb at the appropriate height, he gives them. Otherwise he continues on with his things, like even example of Yudhishthira Pandavas.
Yes.
And when Krishna left, he went to them. So what is the criteria to judge how long a person can continue?
We should try to let Krishna be in control of our lives. Give up this material tendency to want to be in control of everything. Let Krishna be in control. Give him the opportunity to give us direction, and he will. He'll let us know if we're listening. But if we're trying to make all the plans ourselves, then Krishna doesn't have much opportunity to tell us what his plan is. He has a plan for every one of us. But we have to put aside all other plans first and be ready to listen to his plan. Then he'll take over our lives and let us know at every moment, what's the right thing to do. Sarva dharnaman parityaja. Give up all your plans and just take shelter of me. And then, aham tvam sarva papebhyo. I'll save you from all danger of doing the wrong thing. Even if you do the wrong thing, what you think is the wrong thing, because I asked you to do it, there won't be any sin involved. There won't be any bad reaction. If you're acting just only for my pleasure, and you're actually doing it according to my instructions, there's no danger for you. No matter what you or anybody thinks is right and wrong, it's right because you're doing it for me. So, and such a devotee, Krishna will always tell him, let him know one way or another when it's time to change his lifestyle or to change something. Krishna will give that devotee, you know, the hint. But we have to become dependent on Krishna and let him direct our lives. We have to let him do that. Okay? Yes, Prabhu.
Probably you were saying that in the mental world, whichever thing we deal with, there is a possibility of becoming attached to it.
Yes.
So, my question is, connection to where we are teaching or where we are having connection with devotees.
Yes.
So, is there a possibility that we will become attached to them also? So, in positive sense, becoming attached to devotees is good.
Yes.
But this attachment may lead to some problem also. We should not become wrong. There is something like that also on devotees.
Well, what can happen is that devotees misuse their association to indulge in prajalpa, in pursuing material interests, and just hanging around and being friends in the mundane sense, you know, and developing sentimental attachments. So these, then it becomes material, maybe in a subtle way. When we become sentimentally attached to one another, you know, none of us will be together forever. There will always be separations. That's always arranged by the force of time. So that danger is there. But the biggest danger is in, you know, becoming superficial friends. Friends who simply help one another waste their time talking nonsense and doing nonsense. There are different words for friend in Sanskrit. Mitra is just a friend, a companion. Surit is more serious. Surit means a well-wisher. Your companion may encourage you, let's go out and, you know, and enjoy. Let's do some nonsense. But a well-wisher will never encourage you to do something that's not good for you. So we have to be attached to each other as surit, as well-wishing friends, not just as mundane companions. Let's sit around and complain about other devotees. Then the friendship is bad because you're using it to commit aparads. So everything can be misused. Everything can be misused. Sannyas can be misused. You can worship the deity in the wrong way and commit offenses. Everything, even the most transcendental activities, can all be abused, including the association of devotees. Well, okay, that's not no great sin, but it's going to be a cause of frustration. When you depend on the physical presence of your companion, when Krishna is not going to allow you to remain attached all the time. Just like when Krishna left Vrindavan, we see that the residents of Vrindavan were suffering so much, they were in torment. But actually, that torment was only apparent. They're experiencing the highest ecstasy in separation from Krishna, and their love for Krishna becomes more and more deep. More, they become more connected with Krishna by his separation. But suppose Krishna goes away, and someone says, "Oh, I give up on that Krishna," and he loses interest in him. Then he wasn't a real, then his attachment to Krishna was just sentimental. Or the spiritual master goes away and you can't continue in his physical absence. Some Prabhupada disciples could not continue in Krishna consciousness without Prabhupada's physical presence, and they gave up. That means their attachment to Prabhupada was too sentimental. If you have a spiritual attachment, the physical proximity, the physical presence should not be required, even in separation. The attachment will just increase. But someone, when the physical connection is broken, if the relationship is spoiled by that, that means his connection was only sentimental. So if we get too attached to remaining physically with one another, when that's not going to be possible in the material world, to stay always with everybody forever, then we're going to be frustrated. And if we're completely sentimental, we'll just give up in frustration.
Yes.
This is about seniors and equals you are talking. And I want to discuss about juniors also. Sometimes to whom we are preaching or to whom we are guiding in future life.
Yes.
Sometimes if they don't follow the what they're supposed to follow up to the mom or they don't follow the traditional consciousness. So sometimes those things trouble us. And why this person has gone away? Why this person has gone away from Krishna consciousness? Or why this person is not following up to the mark which is supposed to follow? So this is also comes in the attachment only, mental attachment.
Yes.
And if yes, then what should we?
This is the preacher is attached to the results of his preaching. He expects that everybody he preaches to should accept 100% everything I say and obey completely. That's unrealistic. Unrealistic expectations. That everybody's going to respond with 100% acceptance of everything I say. If you expect that, then you're going to be disappointed. That's also not sentimental, but it's unrealistic expectations.
So actually, it's because we are coming in contact with somebody frequently and becoming attached to him. So what is the remedy for it?
Okay, so you actually feel something for the person you're preaching to, and you're disappointed when he fails to respond, or he tried and then he gives up. That's natural. That's natural. To feel pain when someone that you have some love for dies, or what is worse, if he gives up his spiritual life. It's natural to feel, feel the pain of loss. But a devotee doesn't indulge too much in that. Someone, a friend or a lover, or someone you love dies, or someone falls down from devotional service. It's very painful, but we have to go on. Life has to go on. Prabhupada suffered very much when some of his first disciples fell down, when the first devotees fell down. It was a shock to him, as if he didn't expect it. But he had to carry on. So those are the unavoidable pains of material existence. We have to not be sentimentally attached. We can't be discouraged and lose our enthusiasm when these disasters occur. A preacher, the Prabhupada was talking in the purport, a preacher has to suffer. He was talking about a preacher has to suffer the discouragement of inimical people. There's also the discouragement of sympathetic people who fail to succeed. You know, you tried to preach to somebody and it didn't work completely. That's also pain. But that pain has to be tolerated. That's the risk of preaching, the pain of failure. Doctors are trying to cure people. Some of the patients die. You don't think that hurts the doctor? It's very painful. When he tried to save someone's life and he couldn't. But he has to live with that. Okay. Yes? Well, it's probably, you know, it's not necessarily only one or the other. I can think that it's my fault that I could have preached better. If I was more pure, that person would have been more convinced and more, you know, empowered if I had some spiritual power. It's my fault. You can think like that, but that's only partly true. It's also that person's who you preach to. It's his fault also. So you can think it both ways. It's not black and white. It's not just one or the other. You can say it's my irresponsibility or my failure to be a better preacher. Anyway, we should be inspired to become better preachers from our failures. Our failures should inspire to become more better at what we're trying to do. We should try to learn from the mistakes. Mistakes will happen. Tragedies will happen. But from them, we learn to avoid them in the future. If you want to become a better preacher, that's difficult. You have to actually get more of Krishna's mercy. You have to give up whatever anarchas you may have. Then to become, you know, more fully empowered. So that's like that's the whole struggle of our spiritual life. It's not an easy thing. Being a preacher is not easy. Yes? The Paramatma and the mind's voice. We can assume most of the time it's not Paramatma speaking to us, but our own mind. It takes purified intelligence to actually be able to hear and recognize the Paramatma speaking. So, until our intelligence becomes very pure, we should just let the spiritual master act as the translator for the Paramatma. Paramatma is talking, but we don't understand his language. So we need a translator. That's the spiritual master. Okay? We take our guidance from the spiritual master. Chaitya Guru is subtly behind the scenes, and he's pushing us here and there, you know, giving us little nudges. But we don't directly communicate with the Chaitya Guru until we become pure enough for that. And when we're pure enough, then we'll be able to recognize just instinctively what's the voice of the Paramatma. A very advanced devotee can do that. How he does it, it's not something we can analyze. It's transcendental instinct. But in our stage, we should, you know, understand what the Paramatma is saying by hearing it from our spiritual master. Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. That's we are translators of the Paramatma, or the spiritual master, the Shastra, and the association of devotees.
sometimes, especially in japa, we get some very good ideas and thoughts about preaching Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
So is it because like the brain to Krishna for service and Krishna responding, or is the mind that will lead us from japa? And what should we do at that time?
It could be either. Someone who's got a fiery mind, an active mind, that mind may not like just sitting down and doing nothing during japa period. So you may come up with so many practical ideas while you're supposed to be hearing Krishna's names. So I wouldn't just presume, oh, these are the inspirations of Super Soul and I should immediately get a notebook and write everything down and stop my japa. Better finish your japa. Chant 16 rounds attentively, and then you can plan everything out later on in the morning. That's better. To keep the mind under control while you're chanting your rounds, not distracted, even by your devotional business, is better. As much as you can. I mean, it's hard to keep the mind completely down. It's going to come, you know, make outbursts. But better tell the mind, very nice idea, we'll talk about it later. Yeah. Yes? Okay, we can stop now. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.